To discuss the real issues affecting Australia and New Zealand, this is Trad-Tasman Talk, jointly produced by TheUnshackled.net and The Mr. Berry Mr. Berry Show. Now here are Tim Wilms and Stephen Berry, live from Melbourne.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another week of Trad-Tasman Talk. It is Tim Wilms, Editor-in-Chief of The Unshackled, here on this Friday, the 17th of September. It is 6 p.m. here in Melbourne.
And I'm Stephen Berry, also in Melbourne from The Mr. Berry, Mr. Berry Show.
And starting from, well, the usual weird time from 11:59 p.m. tonight, we get some freedom treats, as they're known, as a reward for us getting vaccinated.
Yeah, not so much freedom in a sense. I really hate that phrase where the government's giving us some freedom and reward, because they should never have taken it away in the first place. But
yeah. Freedom, it's not supposed to be something that's given and taken by an authoritative government. It is innate, as the was so eloquently put in the US Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, unless you actually commit a crime or something, but so far all we're doing is committing the crime of getting sick from a lab experiment in China.
Yes, I think we're all anticipating Sherry Markson, Sky News investigative reporter's book, What Really Happened in Wuhan, and her complimentary documentary on Monday evening.
I'll be looking forward to that.
But yes, these are freedom treats, because Victoria reached today 70% first dose of the vaccine. You're now fully vaccinated, Stephen.
Yep. Got my second shot today. Happy to have it. Not for anyone else's benefit, just mine. I just don't want to die. So don't give me shit for not wanting to die.
Are you still going to be hanging out with the unvaccinated? Because Gladys Berejiklian, the New South Wales Premier, said last week that she didn't want to be around anyone who wasn't vaccinated.
Oh, wow. Well, it's not like I get a lot of choice about the people that I'm around at work. So we might have to put tags on their shirts as they come in, so I can decide whether I'm going to be near them or not.
Yeah, maybe like a yellow star if they're unvaccinated.
I think that would be fitting.
Yeah, so from, well, basically tomorrow, so the two-hour, what is it, outdoor exercise limit is being doubled to 4 hours. Wow, because Dan said it would only be extended to 3 hours, but he's actually given us four, so that's so amazing. And also, you can have a outdoor picnic if you're unvaccinated or just have had one dose. You can meet up with one other person for a picnic for up to 4 hours, or if you and your friends are double jabbed, you can meet up to groups of five from two households, which is, wow, that's even more awesome. But still can't take your mask off to consume alcohol. And if you're, what is it, if you're having your picnic while your children are on the playground, then I don't think that you can eat at that picnic. I think that's...
And how the hell is 4 hours exercise a reward anyway? I don't want to do 4 hours exercise.
Well, it's exercise or social interaction. So you can just hang with somebody on a park bench for 4 hours if you like, within 10 kilometer radius of your home, because that's the other thing. The travel radius has been expanded from 5 to 10. I'll be able to go to my favorite KFC from tomorrow.
Whenever I feel like eating KFC, I then regret it very shortly.
It does. It depends how much you eat and how greasy the chicken that you get from from the KFC that you've got it from, because some can be sort of really sort of greasy. Others can be much more, you would say, dry.
And the saltiness of the chips varies widely as well.
Yes, that's what a lot of people are asking. What's the point of the jab if you still have restrictions on your life? Because, yes, there's been people who've been, fully vaccinated for 3 or 4 months now, but by the time the Victoria and New South Wales are fully open up, those people who got vaccinated at the beginning will need their booster shot. Kresho says, can you be with 7 friends if you're triple jabbed? I think there was a guy in Sydney. He's had 4 vaccines. He was double jabbed with both Pfizer and AstraZeneca.
Yeah, I saw him on the news a few weeks ago, and he was dodging accusations that he's taken them out of the arms of needy people. But in terms of, what's going to happen to the restrictions, I didn't get vaccinated so that I could reduce the restrictions. I just got vaccinated because I really don't want COVID.
You would, like, it would suck getting COVID, but although you're late 30s, you'd largely be fine. Yeah. You're not, what is it, the tripo autoimmunocompromised comorbidities, pre-existing condition?
No, I probably would be fine, but yeah, getting it would be shit. It's probably why I get the flu vaccination as well, though I haven't got one this year.
I never had a flu vaccine, even after I got the flu in 2019. Everyone forgets how awful the 2019 winter flu season was here in Melbourne. That was pretty horrible. There was a cluster at the of the flu at the then Unshackled studio, because the people who I did the Uncuckable show with at the time, Dave and Maddie from XYZ, they also got the flu. Maybe it was, the poor, reverse cycle ventilation as well.
Yeah, the other point is that if you do get the flu vaccination, you generally have to pick up the slack for everybody else who drops like flies. So I feel like I'm missing out.
The rest who get knocked out from the flu. That's what Gladys Berejiklian said this week after, her deputy John Barilaro said, oh, at 80%, the double dose, the unvaxxed will get to do a bit more. And she's like, oh, don't assume that. Don't let everyone else do the heavy lifting. Which is sort of like getting jabbed is sort of, well, it does make you sort of like a bit sore, like you've been doing heavy lifting.
Yeah, it is slightly sore. I didn't have any of the reactions that some other people have had.
Some people get like really crook. You had, AZ?
Yeah. I like to be a bit rebellious. And it seems that these days getting the dodgy vaccination at the behest of the government is about the most rebellious thing I can do.
No, I call it the anti-globalist vaccine, because it's the one that the pro vaxxers have been demonizing.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, it was just a matter of the place closest to where I live only had AstraZeneca, so I was like, oh, fuck it, I don't care, I'll do that.
I have to correct something I said about the AstraZeneca vaccine last week. This is according to a fan of ours, John, who's a health professional, that the AZ technology uses genetically altered endovirus to deliver the RNA into the cell to instruct the production of the spike proteins. The other brands of jab inject the mRNA coated in a lipid and nanoparticles that protect the NMRNA and open the pathway to the cell. Essentially, they are all the same. Both have central technology of mRNA, but deliver this differently through the cell.
Well, we know genetic engineering is a good thing anyway.
Now, tomorrow is when there is allegedly another worldwide Freedom Day rally, and Victoria Police, after the previous two Freedom Day demonstrations in Melbourne, when despite all the letters that they sent out to known protesters warning them of incitement charges and massive fines, there are still thousands of people in the streets of Melbourne. And the police commissioner, Shane Patton, after the last Freedom Rally, which he called the most violent demonstration he'd ever seen in Melbourne for 20 years, which another person could interpret it as a mostly peaceful protest, he hinted that he would shut down the public transport network for the next protest, which is what he's going to do from tomorrow. So from 8 a.m. till 2 p.m., there's not going to be any public transport into the city, and they're going to set up a perimeter stopping all cars and Ubers. This is the Rebel News report here, where he sort of echoed Dan and said that freedom advocates are selfish, arrogant. And the headline from this article, because in the same press conference, he said that Victoria Police, they've established two COVID commands until at least the end of 2022. So one is for, what is it, quarantine, and the other is for community compliance, because Shane Patton said, out of abundance of caution, we still believe that there's going to be health mandates until then. Well, coincidentally, the end of 2022 is when the next Victorian state election is due.
Yeah, this is highly disturbing stuff, eh? So people are slowly but surely complying with the request to get vaccinations, but the freedoms that you would expect to start appearing really aren't appearing, and the government's making plans to ensure that we still have all these really authoritarian restrictions in place for quite some time yet. As in terms of restricting the right to protest, this is way over the line of what I think is acceptable for this government to be doing. I think most people accept maybe, you know, a pandemic of this severity may justify some precautions to keep people safe, but destroying your right to protest and shutting down the entire city to stop it happening is quite reprehensible.
Even though we are, what is it, still in a pretty hard lockdown, the city of Melbourne from tomorrow is going to be in an ultra mega hard lockdown.
Yeah, it's not like there's anything you can go do in the city now either, but still it's pretty terrible, and what you would expect to be quite a far-sighted liberal Western democracy.
Now, we had the New South Wales government announce today that they're going to be having a pilot program of home quarantine for the fully vaccinated, which is what South Australia is doing with that facial geo technology, so you can prove that you're inside your home and haven't left. Though if we're going to get to, what is it, the overwhelming majority, well, almost all Australians are fully vaccinated, I should say, then it looks like that, well, if there is going to be quarantine, it's going to be home quarantine, which begs the question, what's going to happen to all these quarantine camps that they're building? There's one in Mickleham and in Melbourne, the Well Camp in Queensland, and also the original one, Howard Springs in the Northern Territory. Sorry, not quarantine camps, National Centres for Resilience. Are they going to...
What they
were before. I mean, Ridges and, what is that, Four Seasons, all these Hyatt, they'll just go back to being normal hotels. But all I can think that they'll use these quarantine camps or centres for is, well, putting the unvaccinated in there.
Yeah, well, but of course, I think the reason why we were using hotels for so long is because the government's restrictions have completely shut down any income for them. So if we're going to set up these camps in the future, who's going to be using the hotels? I don't think anyone. Still can't even get into the country.
Well, they are foreshadowing that international travel will be permitted. The restriction on leaving the country will be lifted by year's end when Victoria and New South Wales reach the 80% thresholds first, which I feel that a lot of the plane trips will be one way out of the country.
Yeah, well, it's not a very welcoming environment at the moment for anyone wanting. So why would anyone want to come back?
Or why would anyone want to come to Australia, given what's been beamed into their screens and online over the past few months? Yeah, come to Australia, where the COVID cops are everywhere, and before you get to enjoy any of Australia, you have to spend a couple of weeks at the camp. Oh, and to get into anywhere, you have to have this QR check-in system.
And the only thing there is to watch on TV is multiple state premiers staring down the camera and threatening you. It's even worse than New Zealand.
Oh, there's still a reality TV to take your mind off things. What was it, Married at First Sight? That's number one show in Australia that's finished for this year. I think Survivor Australia is still going. The big one at the moment is the Masked Singer.
Oh, that sounds appalling. That's why I don't watch TV.
Last year, the Masked Singer, which was filmed in Melbourne, they had an outbreak there. This was during our second wave. So the joke was, if masks work, then why was there a outbreak at the Masked Singer?
I presume they don't have medical masks on. It's some sort of big freak show costume, really, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's a full body costume.
Mm. Yeah, that won't be on my watching list. I'd rather watch reruns of The Man in the High Castle.
And now when Dan announced this, what is it? He called it modest easing yesterday. He's going to release his full roadmap on Sunday, which if it's anything like his roadmap last year, will be ultra slow out, or what he'll say, cautious baby steps. That's the buzzword there. But he also announced that construction workers by the end of next week, we'll have to have at least one dose of a vaccine, essentially a vaccine mandate, and also their tea rooms would be shut because there's been so many construction site cases linked to construction sites and outbreaks are there. So they're closing down those cabin-style tea rooms, and so the construction workers, well, they'll have to have their lunch elsewhere. And they decided
like
to have
their,
that's what they decided to do today in Melbourne, to have their smoko in the middle of the streets. So that was at multiple construction sites today. Cresho has this comment here. What is it? They were more effective than the truckies, and also, what is it? They should be more humble and accept the privilege that they have. Yeah, I did notice a number of tweets in that because construction work has been ongoing throughout these 6 lockdowns that we've had in Melbourne, albeit at the moment they're reduced to 25% capacity. And construction was halted for a fortnight in Sydney. The reason why it has probably never been halted in Melbourne is because of this man, the CFMEU Victorian Secretary, John Secca. He, of recent weeks, has pushed back against the vaccine mandate, but he's sort of, it's unusual for him to sort of roll over that, saying that the mandate was unfortunate, but extreme circumstances sometimes call for extreme measures. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. Though he did defend the construction workers, what is it, having a smoker on the street today, saying, well, there's nowhere else for them to go and have a smoker.
But it'd be interesting. They were following the law.
It'll be interesting tomorrow if Dan goes off at these selfish, arrogant construction workers, like he does Hector, anyone else he believes is not following either the rules themselves or the spirit of the rules. But given that, well, John Kasetka's CFMEU has poured millions of dollars into the Labor Party over many years, I don't think that Dan will do that, or Dan would probably be worried that if he went too hard against John Secca, he might push Dan down another flight of stairs, or what is it, might give Dan a beating like John Secca has allegedly done to his wife of late, Emma Walters, a lawyer who works for a Labor-aligned law firm. And he was convicted of harassing her in 2019 and breaching court orders after more than 25 calls and 45 text messages in which he called her a weak effing piece of shit and a treacherous Aussie effing C and an effing dog. They're still together.
I'm glad that I didn't laugh until you said they're still together.
Yes,
that certainly is a bizarre love story.
John Secca is a very intimidating person, is the overall point that I'm trying to communicate.
And to be a successful union thug, that's quite important, I would imagine. It's probably a job requirement in, for the trade unions.
I mean, hey, he's managed to have his members able to work throughout the entire 6 lockdowns, even though they're causing a lot of the new clusters.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe them as privileged as someone earlier did, because just getting to go and do your job each day isn't a privilege. I think that's a right. We're simply less oppressed than other people in Melbourne.
Now let's go back to, let's go over to, I should say, your former home city, Auckland, where it's in the fifth week of its level 4 lockdown, which was supposed to be a snap 7-day lockdown to flatten the curve of Delta.
Yep, and even the rest of the country, including the South Island and Stewart Island, which haven't had COVID cases since the first lockdown last year, are still sitting in level 2. But those level 2 restrictions are now tougher than they were before due to the Delta variant. So, for example, bars can only have a maximum of 50 people in the bar there's no dancing. You have to be seated when you're eating or drinking. And it's not actually economical for bars to open anymore. All it does is reduce the amount of money they're losing versus being closed. And doing wonders for Jacinda's popularity as Prime Minister and for the Labor Party, which I did predict when the lockdown started. Labor's support is now back up to about 46%, between 46 and 48% on recent polls. And National's popularity is absolutely spiraling in a death spiral. National's popularity now just 21%. And the ACT Party's popularity, I mean, nobody would have ever guessed this in a lifetime, is now up to 14.9%, enough for 19 MPs. I'm not generally a fan of predicting the demise of political leaders because it's one of those things that happens so often that if you say it often enough, you'll be right. But there hasn't been a mainstream poll for about 2 months, so I would imagine that if the next Colmar Brunton poll or News Hub Read Research poll comes out and has her down on previous polls, I'd say she's just about finished. But it's also a bit of an indictment on the National Party, isn't it, that the most likely person who will become leader again is the former leader who they dumped because he had sub 10% popularity as preferred prime minister, yet National's popularity never dropped under 40% while he was leader.
And the thing is, though, Judith Collins, well, she's the only one with any fight in the party. I mean, they just replaced her with a weakling leader who would just go along with whatever Jacinta was doing.
That's quite right. Over half the votes in Parliament in the previous term were 119-1 in favour of the government's proposals. And, of course, it was David Seymour who was consistently the one MP. He was New Zealand's, I guess, Mr. No, really, because Rob was Dr. No.
He's not a doctor, so he's just Mr. No.
Mr. No, yeah. but Simon Bridges was, I think he was fine as a leader. There's something about his personality that just doesn't work for a whole lot of people. Judith and always had a reputation as a scrapper, and she was called Crusher, and I used to really enjoy that part of her personality where she was just so blatantly rude to people, and it seemed to work for her. But these days she seems to have mellowed out a wee bit, and maybe people are disappointed.
Well, me looking from the outside, she's definitely one of the most ferocious opposition leaders I've seen. I mean, we have some shockers in Australia on the right side opposition leaders. I mean, here in Victoria, what is it? They replaced Michael O'Brien with Matthew Guy, both short men who look quite it looked like pipsqueaks in compared with Dan and his strong overbearing persona. Matthew Guy has got a bit more fight in him than Michael O'Brien, but in the Victorian Liberal Party's second coming of Jeff Kennett, who was tall, big, authoritative figure in Victoria, and never gave his enemies an inch when he was premier in the 90s.
The Victorian leader has recently been changed to a former Victorian leader. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. Michael O'Brien, Matthew Guy lost in a landslide to Dan Andrews in 2018, but it's worked in the past. The Liberals with recycled leaders. Jeff Kennett, former Premier I just mentioned, he lost two elections before he won. John Howard, second longest serving Prime Minister, he lost an election before he came back as leader.
Well, yeah, it's probably one of the least secure jobs in Australia, isn't it, leading a political party?
Especially in opposition, there's a bit more stability now in the actual job of governing.
Though even that wasn't the case prior to ScoMo. They were still
It looks like in Australia the revolving door of leadership is coming to an end.
Mm. And I guess in New Zealand, being opposition leaders, exactly the same. I mean, we're still, it's still been a 12-month period. There's been three leaders of the National Party. If these poll results don't turn around by the next poll, I would say it's going to be another leadership change within a 12-month period. And the same thing happened to Labor, though, too. They went through leaders on a 1 to 2 yearly cycle over the past 9 years while they were in opposition too.
A United Australia Party, they've claimed that they've got 40,000 members now since Craig Kelly, former Liberal MP, became their leader. That's what President of the party, Clive Palmer, claims. Certainly the UAP has got a new... has been reborn with its central anti-lockdown message and Craig as leader. I can guarantee coming up to the next election, we'll probably see Craig Kelly on United Australia Party ads every ad break.
Yeah, the amount of money that Clive is putting into that advertising is quite phenomenal. He's got ads on the front page of newspapers almost daily. Radio ads constantly, and we're not even in an election year.
He spent 80 million last federal election.
Sorry?
He spent 80 million last federal election on ads.
Wow, and he didn't get a single person in.
No, but obviously he loves, obviously splashing his money around in campaigns.
I think half of it's attention for him, isn't it? Because... I mean, what does the party stand for in any case? It just seems to be more of an anti-politician political party than anything else.
Well, that's what the message has always been, but now it has this central anti-lockdown, pro-freedom message and also pro-medical choice, which is obviously choice not to take the vaccine, but the choice to take hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin.
Well, we've already got a party doing that. It's the Liberal Democrats, and they actually understand what freedom's about and are serious about it rather than just using it as a peddling tool to get power in the House of Representatives.
But they don't probably have an $80 million budget like Clive does.
No, I can assure you they don't.
And now, as I keep reminding our viewers, that Auckland level 4, that means everything is shut, even fast food, so no KFC and no McDonald's. And right. Somebody was so desperate for McDonald's they left Auckland to go drive through, and were stupid enough to post it on TikTok. I think this is frozen here, this page.
I actually saw a copy of a tweet yesterday where a woman was still stuck in New South Wales and wondering how she was going to get across the border. So someone tagged the Victoria Police in the replies and said this person's considering breaking the law.
Yes, I saw that, because there's still, what is it, on the north side of the Murray in Albury, stranded Victorians staying in caravan parks, or you could call them makeshift refugee camps, not able to get home, which is, what's the point in having the hard border anymore? I mean, what is it? New South Wales is stable at 1,100 cases per day, and like Victoria's at 500 cases per day. Like, if they've tested negative, like, just let them in.
Yeah, it seems quite pointless now, especially as both premiers are finally committed to living with the virus rather than eliminating it.
Now let's turn to it was an announcement that, it was kept top secret while it was negotiated. On Wednesday night, all the news outlets said there'll be a major announcement by the Australian, US and UK leaders tomorrow morning, and obviously that got a lot of people quiet to pick up and take notice. It was broadcast at 7 a.m. Australian Eastern time, And it was basically a new alliance, AUKUS, which is Australia, UK, US. And this is another Rebel News article written by Alexandra Marshall, that the new agreement doesn't explicitly name China, but is designed to make it easier for the allies to share information and technology.
It's almost like a Five Eyes agreement that wipes out the two lazy eyes.
Yeah. So, well, what else? I think the New Zealand eye is pretty much, well, it's blind now. It can't see at all. And
now.
Yeah. This is what Jacinta's response was to the new, because it basically is replacing ANZUS now, which was the original Pacific region treaty between the US, Australia and New Zealand, born out of World War II. This is what Jacinta said.
It doesn't change. This is not a treaty level arrangement. It does not change our existing relationships, including Five Eyes, or our close partnership with Australia on defence matters. We have an independent foreign policy. We'll take our own view on foreign policy issues. We'll continue to make a contribution, but our lens is very much peace, stability, and a rules-based order. That'll always be the case.
And that's what China has said their foreign policy is about, and said that this new alliance threatens peace in the region.
We've seen throughout the Cold War over the 20th century that one of the most effective means of securing peace is the ability of both sides to completely wipe each other out with nuclear weapons. So
yeah,
I think this makes perfect sense.
Yeah, Australia is, as part of this new alliance, finally ditched this ridiculous idea to have our new submarine fleet diesel-powered, built by the French, $90 billion contract. So it was basically, most people consider it, the reason this contract with the French was signed is because they'd be constructed in Adelaide to save Defence Minister Christopher Pyne's seat, which he abandoned in 2019. He retired from politics and now is a defense consultant, though despite being the defense minister, he couldn't secure his Twitter account because infamously on the night after the same-sex marriage plebiscite results were announced, Christopher Pyne was a vocal supporter of same-sex marriage, despite being a married Catholic with four children. Over the course of that night, his Twitter account liked some gay porn. And when he awoke, he said, "My account was hacked."
I'm a bit skeptical about that. It always seems like the most conservative Christians.
Although as I said, he eventually came out to support the same-sex marriage yes campaign.
Well, there you go. I mean, it reminds me of one of those super church ministers in the States who was always so vocal against homosexuality, but then was found to be smoking methamphetamine with a gay prostitute.
His former Liberal colleague, then Senator Cory Bernardi, said that he was deeply worried about what this hacking meant for our national security and wanted an investigation to see how far and deep this penetration had been.
And so maybe this is what's eventually led to the terrorism laws passed a couple of weeks ago, which give the government a lot more authority to go through your personal electronic accounts.
There was never any investigation into this alleged hacking. Labor leader Bill Shorten initially said, "Oh yes, we should have like some investigation," and then, "Oh no, we're not going to have one." It was just an unfortunate incident.
I'm sure it happens on Twitter a lot, but I don't think it was a hacking somehow.
But yes, going back to these subs, so the good thing about, or I should say the great thing about nuclear subs is that they don't need to come up from the sea for refueling. They have better stealth protection, which means that it's harder for them to be detected on radars. And the fact that our new subs are going to be nuclear, well, they're not going to be used for another 20 years. That's how long it takes to build submarines. Is that it basically is the final nail in the coffin of the cringe boomer anti-nuclear movement.
Yeah, and I mean, there's still the Green Party's claiming they're going to be little Chernobyls in the sea beneath South Australia, which is just...
Oh, yes, that's what...
But New Zealand's really hurting themselves here by continuing to have this ridiculous ban on nuclear-powered ships in New Zealand. They've really been relegated down to friends as opposed to allies now, I think.
Yeah, it just seems as already said, they're not coming in New Zealand waters. And, well, that's the reason why she has that position is because the third Labor government in New Zealand in the 80s to basically,
the fourth one,
help keep their support when they were doing all those radical free market policies went radically anti-nuclear, especially over the Rainbow Warrior bombing by the French. They should be happy that we cancelled a French defence contract.
Yeah, well, I think pissing off the French by changing to the nuclear subs is kind of like the cherry on top of what's really a fantastic deal for Australia.
Yeah, and the French will get over it. Like, obviously, they're pissed off at the moment that we're not going to do the contract. But, you know,
I think if you just gave them the $90 billion and said, whoops, sorry, it'd probably be better value for money than building these very expensive and hard-to-maintain diesel submarines.
Yeah, it was, I don't know why the initial decision was made under Christopher Pyne and Malcolm Turnbull to have diesel-powered submarines, but thank God it's been junked. It's bipartisan, this nuclear sub deal, but federal Labor opposition, they said they don't want a greater domestic nuclear industry, which is, I think, a shame because we've got so much uranium here. It would solve a lot of our energy issues. And also that they don't want Australia to have nuclear weapons, which I'm actually, I'm not sure about you, but I'm actually in favour of nuclear weapons, given that we have the history of the Cold War now. Like, obviously, when they first came... The arms race began. It freaked everybody out because they can destroy the world. But mutually assured destruction kept the world largely peaceful post-1945.
Yeah, I completely agree that nuclear weapons are probably the reason why there wasn't a third global war. A little country like New Zealand obviously doesn't need them, but I wouldn't have an issue with Australia doing it.
Well, because... we are in basically a second Cold War now with this announcement. I mean, it's basically about keeping the People's Republic of China in its box. And unlike the Soviet Union, China is in our region. Our corporations, business have become so intertwined with them now. It's certainly the threat of the CCP to infiltrate not just our institutions but our culture of freedom it's been obvious to all for the past 5 years.
Yeah, and unlike the Soviet Union, the Chinese are only communist in the way they restrict people's lives and choices, but economically they're not, and it makes them actually far more dangerous than the Soviet Union ever was.
Well, they're a fascist regime now, and this is why I talk about the corporations that are now codependent on China, because fascism is governments and corporations working together.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And we're seeing, especially with social media censorship, at the behest of a lot of governments. I mean, that is the definition of fascism, using corporations to implement government edicts.
Well, that's what Mussolini said fascism was. He said it was essentially corporatocracy.
Yeah, and this is the actual definition of fascism, not the ones that Antifa scream.
Well, Antifa is the epitome of fascism.
Now, speaking of social media censorship, now the social media companies like Facebook and Twitter, even though they claim that they're platforms, therefore they're not liable for things that are published on their platform, they are more and more acting like publishers in censoring content which is supposedly hate speech or misinformation. But meanwhile, the actual publishers of Facebook pages are liable for the comments published on Facebook below their page.
Yeah, so this is just a result of a court decision. So there's still plenty of room to appeal it, but it's certainly quite disturbing.
And oh, really, no, this is the High Court. This is the High Court, the highest court in Australia. There's no appeal.
Oh, right, unless you went to the Privy Council.
No, you can't. Well, the only means now is to change the defamation laws.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so this all stemmed from the mainstream media outlets were found liable for comments against Aboriginal teenage criminal Dylan Voller. So they were successfully sued for defamation by Dylan Voller's lawyers for comments underneath. And so the mainstream media outlets with all their legal counsels appealed all the way to the High Court, and the High Court said, yep, upholding the decision, you're liable for comments underneath Facebook posts. And there was a previous decision in this regard with political posting mama Mariki Rancey, who was a campaigner against the Victorian Safe Schools program, that so-called LGBT anti-bullying program. She also campaigned against the same-sex marriage plebiscite as well. She was forced to settle a lawsuit for $100,000 to an LGBT activist for comments that other people wrote on her political posting mama Facebook page. And she has now, because of this High Court decision, just now unpublished her page now, because she can't afford any more lawsuits, given that she is such a huge target for the LGBT activists.
Yeah, and it just doesn't make any sense to me at all. If Facebook's not liable for the comments that we put on Facebook, then why are we liable for the comments that are put on our posts on Facebook?
Yeah, exactly. And as I said in my preface, I mean, Facebook and Twitter act like publishers now. I mean, it's not a free-for-all anymore. It was 10 years ago. But yeah, it's basically like editor's selection now. That's what it is, Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, yeah, and the biggest players with the most money and the most power are almost exempt from the laws, while all the users, etc., are vulnerable to actions that they haven't even taken themselves.
Now, the Victorian government, even though they're busy keeping us in lockdown, they've still got time for a lot of their cultural Marxist social re-engineering agenda. I mean, they banned conversion therapy earlier this year. They also changed the birth certificate laws that you can change your gender on your birth certificate to whatever every 6 months. They've also announced that they're going to be outlawing the public display of the swastika and other Nazi symbols, as well as expanding anti-vilification laws to sexuality, gender identity, gender, disability, HIV status. Now they're wanting to change the religious exemptions to anti-discrimination laws that'll be so that religious schools in Victoria will be prohibited from sacking or refusing to employ teachers because of their sexuality or gender identity.
What's weird to me is that a gay person would want to work for one of these schools.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't like you, so don't fight to be there. What the hell sort of a work environment is that to be in?
And now, obviously, when left-wing governments amend such laws, they're obviously mainly wanting to target Christian schools. But the actual change in the law is that a Muslim school won't be able to fire a LGBT teacher or refuse to hire one.
That should be very amusing to watch, to say the least. Though, in all seriousness, if they weren't giving public money to these schools, then there really wouldn't be an issue. I can see some legitimacy in a government putting caveats on money that it funds to other organisations. But ultimately, shouldn't we just be defunding these schools and letting them get business themselves without subsidies? And then if they want to fire a gay teacher, not really anyone's business.
Well, I favour the libertarian policy proposal of school vouchers, giving parents choice, and religious schools do offer parents a choice. I'll bet the funding is given to the school directly, not to the parents in the form of a voucher.
Mm.
Which is still, I mean, it's still government money, but I think when it comes to educational values, parents, if you want to empower parental choice, they should be able to make the choice to send their child to a school which fits their values. Though most people do agree that students shouldn't be expelled if they happen, like, obviously when they're children they don't know their sexuality, but if they come to realize that they're having same-sex attractions, they shouldn't be expelled if they happen to be at a religious school during that time. And obviously everyone agrees that a hospital which has a religious denomination shouldn't refuse to treat a patient because they're LGBT. And I would also argue,
because I don't agree with that. I think it's a private hospital funding itself.
No, but they receive government funds as well.
Yeah,
like the school does. And also because, well, a hospital's role is to provide a treatment, and health professionals, especially doctors, bound by the Hippocratic Oath. I don't think that they should refuse to employ LGBT doctors. I mean, there's all this talk about not enough doctors, not enough nurses.
We could do that without passing more discrimination laws, though. I actually think that discrimination, well, anti-discrimination laws are actually anti-free association laws. It really shouldn't matter what values you use to determine your interaction with an organisation or another person. And in any case, discrimination still occurs. People just lie about the reasons for doing it. The Christian baker should not be forced to make the gay wedding cake or the Jewish baker the Nazi cake. I would wipe all these anti-discrimination laws.
Well, the thing is about wedding cakes is that, most don't receive large chunks of government money.
No, that's true. Yeah, so you do have to take away the government money as well.
Now, last week, the federal government in Canberra held this Women's Safety Summit, which is, this is basically born out of this Me Too 2.0 movement in Australia, which was born out, well, it began at the beginning of the year with Grace Tame, who was sexually groomed by a former teacher of hers, Nicholas Bester, and he gave an interview to men's rights activist Bettina Arndt, but the law in Tasmania prevented Grace Tame from telling her side of the story, and so she pioneered, well, through her, through other feminist campaigners, they pioneered the Let Them Speak campaign, which was a good campaign, that because silencing victims of sexual assaults, whoever thought that that was a just law? And so Grace Tame was awarded Australian of the Year because of overturning those laws, but she's now basically turned into a you would say a standard feminist activist and anti coalition government activist, given that she attacked the appointment of Scott Morrison's Minister for Women, attacked the appointment of Senator Amanda Stoker as the new Minister for Women, because Amanda Stoker has spoken out against kangaroo courts at universities hearing sexual misconduct allegations, and said that we don't live in a rape culture. And also the coalition has also been whacked by this former Liberal staffer, Brittany Higgins, who, when working for Defence Minister Linda Reynolds, alleges that she was raped by another male staffer, who's been named as Bruce Lehman. He has been charged with one count of sexual intercourse without consent and summoned to appear in the ACT Magistrates Court. He will plead not guilty. So you have these two women, Grace Tame and Brittany Higgins, sexual assault survivors, who, rather than sort of wanting solutions, seem to just be wanting to whack one side of politics. And now Grace Tame has attacked the Morrison government for appointing as a Australian Human Rights Commissioner Lorraine Finlay, because she's called this, Grace Tame, a grave mistake, because Lorraine Finlay doesn't believe in affirmative consent laws.
Affirmative consent, is that nonsense where you have to
agreement before you have sex?
What absolute nonsense. She looks like she's doing about as well as New Zealander of the Year Susie Wiles, who's got in that position for her public commentary on COVID, but has also turned into a real she's become political, really. So there's a Labor government in New Zealand, so she's pro-government, but there are parallels there, I think. And she's got her own neo-Marxist SJW axe to grind, and she does it on a regular basis.
We've had some shockers as Australian of the Year. The Tim Flannery, climate change activist, was, I think, Australian of the Year back in 2007. We were going to be in a perpetual drought, and the sea line was going to be eroded, which is why he bought a beachfront property.
And now I see that this woman's also claiming that we need to have a separate approach to violence against women in Indigenous communities,
No, this is the women's safety minister, because not only do we have a minister for women, which is Amanda Stoker, but a minister for women's safety, which is Anne Rustin. But the reason for this is because
they have to have a job for all the women.
There is a legit epidemic of domestic violence in remote Indigenous communities. So this is.
I imagine they're not all married to union leaders.
So this is an actual issue. Well, an actual crisis which does need some. Need some policies to stem this crisis. I'm trying to be as careful as
possible. It's a form of white supremacy, though, isn't it?
Well, it's apparently white supremacy to claim that there's an epidemic of domestic violence in remote Indigenous communities, or if there is, it's because of white colonization. We're responsible for domestic violence in those communities due to colonization.
Surely the violence in those communities is probably fuels from the same reasons it does anywhere else in Australia: alcohol, poverty, history of violence in the family. How I don't suspect it's any different in Indigenous communities.
Yeah, you pretty much listed the main causes there. I mean, they're very remote and poor, these communities. Obviously, it would be better if they were shut down and the members of this community were offered employment opportunities, business opportunities in the regions and the cities, but to advocate that, that's also racist, and you're advocating for a cultural genocide.
Alcohol sales are restricted in these areas too, I understand.
Yes, they are. There was and there's also obviously wanting to limit alcohol purchases is one thing, and Dan Murphy's a mega liquor outlet, they eventually withdrew their application for a liquor store in Darwin based on the drinking problems up there.
So it's another form of white supremacy, isn't it? It's Indigenous people apparently can't make their own decisions about what they consume.
Yeah. Now, the other bit of, you would say, cultural issue news to come out of Australia is that the Queensland Parliament passed euthanasia laws, or voluntary assisted dying, making it the fifth state in Australia to legalise euthanasia. And again, it's interesting that apparently, Anastasia Palaszczuk is keeping the Queensland border shut to save all the old boomers in Queensland from dying from COVID. Yet she has now said, "Yep, boomers, if you've got some really bad condition, you can knock yourself off."
Yeah, of course, the legalisation of euthanasia is a very good thing. I'm a strong supporter of it.
Well, it's the policy of the ACT Party in New Zealand. They were one of the spearheaders of the euthanasia referendum in New Zealand, which passed last year, although the New Zealand people voted down weed at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, that shouldn't have ever needed to go to a referendum anyway. The only reason why euthanasia did is because that was a requirement of New Zealand First support for the euthanasia law. It would have actually passed the House in the end anyway, but it would have been a much more narrow margin. But you're putting cannabis to a referendum, how ridiculous.
And the Liberal Democrats in Australia, the party that you've joined, they've always been strong supporters of euthanasia.
Yeah, and Campbell Newman, who's now going to be standing for the Liberal Democrats for Senate their next election, also a big supporter of it. So.
But it's, I want to make this point. It's been quite the, I would say, the cultural turn that because, 25 years ago, the federal parliament voted overwhelmingly to overturn the Northern Territory's euthanasia laws because federal parliament can overturn territory laws. That law is still on the books, and leaders from both sides of politics, both at the federal and state level, always said that they're against euthanasia. It was always a very politically toxic issue, even though the polls always said that the overwhelming majority of Australians supported it. I'm personally against euthanasia for the record, but I'm just giving a commentary here. And now we have, well, states basically falling like dominoes to pass euthanasia laws like they did with abortion decriminalization legislation.
Yeah, they're completely different issues there.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just sort of showing how, like, quickly the cultural tide turns. I'm also opposed to abortion as
that's certainly the case. There was only a handful of states in Europe that legalised euthanasia initially, the Netherlands being the most famous of them, and Belgium. There's been a lot of misinformation come out of those as well, due to the access to euthanasia in those states. All the anti-euthanasia campaigners are claiming that we're going to have depressed children allowed to kill themselves, etc. It's just complete nonsense.
We have gone over time because, there was a lot to get through. It's your last chance to send through either a question or super chat on Entropy. I've put the link into the Unshackled and Mr. Berry YouTube chat. You're still doing your regular reports, which are fast and punchy.
Yep. Yeah, it's not long form, we'll put it that way.
And both of us, tomorrow we can enjoy, modest freedom. Because you're fully vaccinated, you can, have a picnic with up to five fully vaccinated people from two households, but just no alcohol. Though you can, this was...
The police will go probably not enforce the alcohol part.
But you can. There is a way that if you wanted to meet your friends, for a picnic already drunk, it's legal to preload at home, and because it's actually legal now in Victoria to be publicly drunk, because the Andrews government decriminalised public drunkenness earlier this year because the police arrested an Aboriginal woman who was drunk and she died in custody. So public drunkenness was legalised for SJW reasons, but also libertarian grounds. So, yeah, you can legally preload at home, get wasted at home, and then meet your friends up in for a picnic up to... if you're fully vaccinated, up to five from two households, then be drunk in public as long as you don't consume more alcohol while you're out there.
I think being drunk in public would be the only reason I'd want to go and have a picnic with four other people. Hopefully we get some freedoms I want soon.
Yeah, we've still got that stupid curfew from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Yeah, that's absolutely appalling. And I was really a result of COVID allegedly being spread by people drinking alcohol outside, but there was nowhere to go in any case.
Yeah, pop-up beer garden in Richmond. The contact tracing commander, Jerome Weimar, confirmed that there was no cases linked to that pop-up pub crawl in Richmond. Though Dan basically confirmed that they're keeping the, what is it, curfew in place to, what is it, stop people sneaking around late at night and keeping the alcohol ban because, well, they don't want people to have too much fun and get carried away and merge their picnic groups. Because you can have some social interaction, but not too much fun. That's basically the message.
Yeah, you have to yell to neighbouring picnic groups rather than just have a cordial conversation.
Though the Victoria Police, even though they are shutting down the CBD tomorrow, they have said that they're not going to police. The picnics are not going to check people's vaccination papers. Well, the difference between if you're unvaccinated, you can have a picnic of two. If you're vaccinated, have a picnic with five from two households. Though in Sydney, though, still picnics are only allowed for the fully vaccinated and they can only do it within a 5-kilometre radius, though Gladys did get rid of the curfew and the LGAs of concern.
Yeah, so Victoria is actually not even the worst offender when it comes to pandemic overreaction. New South Wales certainly takes the prize for that now.
Yeah, from tomorrow, the unvaccinated will get a few extra freedoms.
So why don't they just have the protest in the parks?
Because that wouldn't be in the spirit of the law, as Dan would say.
Well, because they'll get around the public transport ban and everything. I'm probably going to give them a shit now. I've just fixed their protest problem.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they can stop thousands gathering tomorrow, like have gathered in the past. I mean, I'm sure it won't deter the fanatical anti-lockdown protesters, but like. I remember what happened last Freedom Day rally in Melbourne. There was suddenly nobody at midday when it was due to begin, and then they just suddenly all appeared from nowhere.
It is going to be a very interesting day tomorrow.
Yes, it'll be interesting to observe.
Mm.
All right, thank you everyone for watching tonight. I'll be back with Due next week. I'll see how crazy he is now with, what is it, Auckland. It won't get out of lockdown by next Tuesday. If they're lucky, we'll go from alert level 4 to alert level 3, which basically means it's level 4 with KFC and McDonald's, so that person won't have to leave Auckland for the Macca's run now.
Yeah, I would not count on it going down to level 3 next week. Cindy is very, very risk averse with this thing and, well, look at her numbers, it's working for her.
Well, they were going down to the low teens at the end of last week, then they shot up to the 30s and now they're back to the teens. Mm, but tomorrow they go shoot up again.
Yeah, well, there was a spike on the day of the last announcement, so, yeah, don't get your hopes up.
Which it's always been the way with our curve in Victoria. After a huge spike, it goes down a couple of days, then it goes up again, and the curve like continues its trajectory upwards.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good night, everybody. If you are living in Sydney and Melbourne, enjoy your modest new freedoms. Rest of Australia, enjoy your freedoms in your COVID zero hermit states, because it ain't gonna last forever. And see you next week for Trad Tasman Talk with Due. I'll see you, Stephen, again in 2 weeks. People can see your reports. I'll be back next on Monday for Tim's News Explosion, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time on the Wilmsfront channels.
Thanks very much. See you later.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Trad Tasman Talk. To keep up with the latest real news and analysis from the Tasman Nations, visit theunshackles.net and rightminds.nz.